All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Work Group 1 and the Information Blocking Task Force. Quick roll call, and we'll jump right into it. Andy Trescott?
Present.
Michael Adcock?
Here.
Cheryl Turney?
Here.
Great. John Kansky?
Here.
And Denny McComb? And Cynthia Fisher?
Present.
Okay. I will turn it over to Michael to get us started. Are you on mute?
I was, yes. And I was having a great conversation. So, very much. So, good morning. I'm going to say good morning because it's morning where I am and hope that everyone is doing well. Thank you all for joining. I know it's been a while since we have had a work group call. The purpose of that was so that we could focus on getting some of this work done in the document so that we can get to a point where we have some solid recommendations on our portion of this under Work Group 1. I'm not going to waste a bunch of time with this. We're going to jump right into the work. We're going to try to cover HINs and HIEs today, get to Health IT Developer of Certified Health IT, and then move to public comments. So if we could go ahead, Mark, and pull over the Google Docs. Thank you.
Yeah, can you see it?
Hey, Mike, I thought, could I just ask, I thought when we started the call, this is Cynthia, that we were going to work on price transparency today, or maybe I'm confused with what the goal was on today, or is there another day that we're doing on price transparency questions?
So, Cynthia, you were right. I think we didn't get quite as far as we wanted to previously. It's up to the group. I was talking to Andy offline about this. I had on the agenda HIN and HIE and developers because I thought that we really need to get through that. But you're right that we do still have the open conversation about price transparency as well.
Okay, so I'll just try and address that quite quickly now. Yes, we do want to say something about price transparency. I am working with the presumption that everybody on the call has actually come up with their proposed drafting in a variety of places in here. We already have a placeholder in the price transparency group. We actually had already discussed some text to go in there. We'd already agreed that we thought a HITAC task force should be created specifically around producing recommendations for regulations around price transparency. And we left a placeholder there for that input. So if anyone's got that input, we can push it in very, very, very quickly because we already have a lot of this information, the framework ready for that. Does anybody have drafted recommendations to go in there?
And Mark, yes, I guess I just thought today's call was on pricing transparency, so I thought that was the discussion. But that's, are we going to schedule that then for another day? Because there were a series of questions, and the last call that we were on was that the next call would be pricing transparency, and we would go by question by question by question and develop a more thoughtful approach. So that's what I thought we were doing, but we can go back to this order, but I do think it's worthy of its own call.
Was that an agreement that was made on the last call, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, so I think what happened was, we had, Cynthia's right, we had some homework by COB, I think it was Monday, I'm losing track whether it was this week or last week, to post and take a look at the questions and have some thoughtful responses to the bulleted questions that ONC asked in the request for comment, request for information. I think what happened was we got caught up on the auditing issue in EHI and we weren't able to push forward. And we also shortened the last call to an hour. So we didn't get to price transparency when we wanted to. And I think then it got pushed a bit. So again, I'm okay with whatever approach you all want. If you want to do price transparency today or HINs and HIEs and developers.
Okay. Has anybody on the call done their homework around price transparency and got a series of suggestions that we can walk through together?
Yes, this is what I'm going to suggest, Andy, is that I think it warrants its own call. And if you want to finish up here on HINs and exchanges, and CERT, that's fine. But I do think we were going to have a focused call. And I didn't see anybody else's comments on Monday. So, I didn't know if, I have comments we can add in, but I think it's just worthy. It's meaty. It's doable. I know it's a concern. I disagree with the delay of game because, medical records and electronic health records were all started with rate card sharing between providers and payers, and it's been digitized for decades. So, I don't want to say that we need to delay the game because it's all there. It's doable.
Well, that again was disagreeing with that. If I look at the Google document and look where updates have been made, price transparency does feature in those updates. Are those updates come from you? Cynthia?
I had updates in from the last call, but I also have additional that I can add. But I think as a group, we should just decide when we're going to focus on it, and then we focus on it. I think it's worth focus, but it's not here on the agenda today. So I'm happy to go back to what the agenda is and suggest we have another call for price transparency.
I'm ambivalent either way. We can push. I didn't draft the agenda today. I'm happy to stick with it because we do actually have to work through this stuff. But if we want to get price transparency out, because it seems to be the £10,000 gorilla in the room, and we're not going to be able to move beyond it until we've got it done, let's get it done.
What do other members think on this who are on the call?
John?
Mike? So, this is John. Confessing I did not do detailed homework in terms of going point by point and on the preamble questions, I have reviewed them. I have some opinions I'm willing to share, whether that be today or on an additional call.
Okay.
And this is Cheryl. Verbally shared some of the areas of not objection, because we don't object to price transparency. I think we from the payer community want to be sure it's meaningful and that it's usable and that it's digestible by the user, which I'm not sure rate cards are the way to go. So we might have a difference of opinion in terms of the approach. But also, I believe I did share, and unfortunately, I don't think the document I have is shareable outside of my company, but there was an opinion from, and I have to go back and look at it, but the Department of Justice, I believe, on the broad sharing of cost data itself. It's come up in a number of states in the work on the APCDs, because in many areas, especially rural ones, basically having all the rates published tends to drive the prices up and not down, unfortunately. And again, that wasn't our study. It was something that came out of a Department of Justice analysis. So I do think we should have that as a reference here as well, because at the end of the day, we want people to know the cost, but we don't want to put them in jeopardy of having to pay higher costs because of the way that we're doing it.
And I don't know if we're going to, maybe this will give you all some time to think whether we should have the price transparency conversation today or moving forward. But I did want to make a point from ONC's perspective on price information and price transparency, just to be crystal clear. And I think what I've said this a number of times is that, we have a request for comment in the rule that, ONC is able to implement proposals regarding pricing information and price transparency in the final rule. So, we request comment on how, if you all think we should do that, we should do that. And as we made clear, price information as currently drafted is included in the definition of electronic health information. And there's also a request for information more broadly about what the department should be doing moving forward regarding price transparency. that's all to say just that I don't know that it needs to be an all or nothing. And what I was getting at in the last call and Cynthia mentioned is going through the questions is just to determine what level of proposals or recommendations the group would want regarding price information, price transparency. And I think that would be a helpful conversation to have.
This is Michael.
So this is Cynthia. I'll just quickly suggest that why don't we do what is on today's agenda and set aside a separate time to fulfill the request of a task force of HHS to actually work on price transparency and come up with a committee recommendation. And, you know, let's be real. You know, this is a moment in time where patients need to see, know, and choose their healthcare based upon having visibility into real prices.
Okay, let's do our job.
That's my goal, and I'm happy to do it.
Okay, let's do it tomorrow. That's what we've got next week with one meeting.
Yeah, this is Michael. I was about to say the same thing. Let's follow the agenda, get through HIE and the other work, and then cover this on the other call. Cover price transparency on another call.
Yeah, right, please. Great. In the meantime, can people go into the Google document, look at what we already have in the price transparency section and in the implications of the information blocking rule section, because there's comments on price transparency in there too. And actually, to Cheryl's point earlier, there's comments around, I'm paraphrasing, it's all very well sharing information, but it has to be understandable to the patient. And charge masters tend not to be.
All right. Well, so can you all see my screen?
Over to you. Yeah, we can see your screen. Mike?
Okay.
Yes.
Over to you.
Okay. So let's start with HIN. And yes, we can see your screen, Mark. Was there something you wanted to point out there?
No, I have two monitors, and I wanted to make sure that you're able to see the right one. So
yeah, you've got the
right one.
Yeah, so I'm assuming I can't see down far enough to see if there's recommendation. And I see that the proposed recommendation, are we still have others put in? Because I'm trying to toggle between two documents. Okay. So who put this in? Because I can't see the author.
Okay, so. After the last time we discussed this through, I actually went into 21st Century Cures and put this section in. So I went through 21st Century Cures and looked at the way that it refers to health information exchange or health information networks. So you've got basically a couple, maybe three different ways in which 21st Century Cures talks about it. And I was doing this with the intent of seeing whether there was a clear view that 21st Century Cures had, because frankly, working in the industry day in, day out, we use the term HIE, at least in several different ways, and HAN in a couple of different ways. So maybe this was an opportunity to bring clarity, especially because the way that the regulations are drafted, the actors are used as specific ways of executing sanctions against them. So having clarity, I thought, would be a good thing. So we talk about, in this first section, so I say this is supported by the language 21st Century Cures that talks about health information exchange networks and health information exchanges. And that seems to be a specific way of referring to groups of networks that do exchange. So the idea that I've said this before, I think, that network is a noun and exchange is a verb. And if you scroll down to the next section, oh, no, so you got it there. However, there is contrasting reference, okay? Oh, no, up. I was getting ahead of myself. So you've got these three statements here where actually a health information exchange is looks like it's considered to be an organization, okay, which again is another way that the outside world of the market views them, the definition of a health information exchange. And then later on in 4006, we talk about platforms of health information exchanges, which you could read as it being HIE as a technology type or a technology that supports exchange of health information. But then later on in 4006, if you scroll down slightly, there's guidance to be issued to health information exchanges. So it's obviously then that health information exchanges is something that can have guidance issued to it. So there's kind of these, I believe, somewhat confusing uses of the term health information exchange in 21st century cures. What do you guys think?
So this is John. I'm a waffle between wanting there to be clarity around the definitions, but then wondering why mushing the two together doesn't just make it easier for everyone to understand. So I would argue differently if we were going to say, you know what, it doesn't really matter if an organization coming to this regulation fits the they're either an HIE or an HIN, they know they're in that group, and the things that they have to do or avoid doing in this regulation are the same. What does it matter? Meaning argument for maybe just mushing them together versus trying to precisely define those organizations. We haven't precisely defined those by precise, I mean less broad. We haven't, there's been no attempt thus far in previous calls to make the definitions more precise and less broad. So I think you're going to take in some organizations that maybe were not anticipated or intended, but does it matter?
I actually thought you were agreeing with me. It's certainly my intent there, because I want to mush it together. I'm frankly sitting here saying, look, all these types of organizations that are being referred to either as HIEs or HINs, in general, they're all the same thing.
Right.
Okay? So let's just call them as an organization genre, HINs, and they perform HIE.
Yes.
Well, why even bother? You know, I thought we had talked about earlier, like, I thought HHS, you know, has done a thorough job taking the Cures Act. It uses networks and exchanges in the broad sense, and in the broad sense is looking for accountability of handling of patient information. So,
and that's what we're
if you want
to
spend
to
all this
clear.
Effort and time bucketing them in a group, then we have vertical integration of oligopolies that are doing their PBMs, their pharmacies, their hospitals, their insurance companies are coming together. You know, you don't want to have just a sub LLC that is acting as an exchange be the only entity that's accountable when across the vertically integrated, you have a broad use of the patient of information. And there's lots of ways that's being played out. So I just think, why are we bothering doing this? You know, what's the purpose here?
Cynthia, for exactly the reason you just outlined. To achieve what you just outlined, this is, I think, the smartest way of doing it. For exactly that reason of oligarchies, reaching out and spreading their wings into areas where they haven't done previously, doing this achieves exactly what you're fearful of.
Well, why doesn't just a small N and a small E accomplish that, rather than letting these organizations define themselves as narrow and precise?
Well, we're not.
If you have a small N and a small E, as is in Cures, it's broad, and then everybody's in the bucket. because they're actually playing with and changing and exchanging patient information.
But Cures isn't consistent. Cures has capitals and lowercase. If you look at the section above where we are right now, I collected together every single reference to these in Cures, and you'll see there is no consistency, both in usage and in the way it's capitalized or not. So to help achieve exactly what you're looking for, I said, let's just be clear.
Yeah, this pilot and trying to give my interpretation, I think Andy's suggestion is aimed at clarity. It does not make the definitions less broad. It makes them more clear, and it makes the regulation easier to understand and apply.
Yep. It was Cynthia. You inspired this.
I'm just confused by it. So personally,
okay.
Maybe I just need a little more time to understand what you're saying.
Confusing. About what we have on screen right now, what's confusing about that?
Because I think you're changing the definition.
But the definition is not consistent in Cures. What do you think the definition is?
I just have to defer. I have to digest what you've written. I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to digest it before the call, so I'm just reading
okay.
What you have. So feel free to open it to discussion, but I have to read what you have and see how it compares to the existing language.
Well, have you got some alternative language already drafted?
I'm just reading what you have on the screen,
Andy.
Oh,
okay. Okay. No worries.
So, Andy, this is Cheryl. While that's going on, I agree with the recommendation that you're making here, if I understand it correctly. So that the term would be health information network, which is the entity that's administering the exchange of the data. And the act of exchanging the data is health information exchange.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think it makes it more clear.
Thank you, ma'am. And I tried to distill all the discussions we've had into these 4 points, which are, based upon the existing definitions of both exchange and network. I try to bring it, as John says, mush into one place.
Yeah, that's what actually was very helpful.
John is mushing.
Mush is an example of the difference between American and English.
And the issue that I have with this is that there may be other entities, other software providers, not necessarily networks or exchanges as they're defined today. So again, this is
absolutely
where you go, okay,
nope.
We don't want the Stagecoach Association of America defining how railroads and airlines need to and automobiles.
Oh, you're absolutely right, which is why we have this section at the very end of Workgroup 1 called Parties Affected by the Information Blocking Provision. And that is where we have the opportunity to take into account effectively anybody who's processing or handling EHI. And if you look at the let's just quickly take a deviation, Mike, if that's okay
but
with you.
I see it as you're narrowing it, but I see a broad network. Anybody who has a network that's networking patient information, anybody who exchanges patient information. I go back to the broader definition, but HHS may, Mark, you may have something to weigh in.
I just had a thought. Just Andy, I understand. We have that conversation about parties affected, but just to be clear,
yeah.
that's not terminology we use in the rule. It's kind of just, I think you wanted to have a conversation about who would be affected, which I think is an important conversation to have. But to the point that I think Cynthia was talking about, whether you fall on whichever side, we still, our position is that, like, Congress laid out these four actors, you know, developers, providers, networks, and exchanges, and those are the actors that have been identified as falling under the information blocking provision. So if real life entities wanted to determine whether they would be considered an information blocker potentially, they would want to look to the definitions that we provide for those four actors to determine whether they could be considered an information blocker.
Okay. Well, I have to say that I don't find that helpful. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because if you, the reason I sat down and actually went through the Cures Act by myself is to pick out the different ways in which the Act uses the terms. And it is unclear. And I think from you'll hear from John's comments, you'll hear from Cheryl's comments, you've heard from my comments. It's unclear. And this is the industry we work in. So by doing what I've tried to do here, and look, if the consensus of the group is not to move forward, then we don't move forward with it. But however, right now, you know, it seems like there is a building consensus, is to make it clear. And Cynthia is absolutely correct, okay, that there are other actors which are not considered right now. And we need to keep it broad, which is why the additional drafting at the why are we doing?
I'm pulling up the Cures Act because I want to just show you what I'm looking at.
Okay.
I think it that I'm not sure which section. You're right. I mean, first to start, you're right that Congress was inconsistent in the use of many terms in Cures, but this language right here, to me, under information blocking is pretty clear. If conducted by a health information technology developer, exchange, or network. I mean, they're talking about those actors, and then if conducted by a healthcare provider.
Okay, so do we really want to get into the grammar and fight this one backwards and forwards? Do you mean a health information technology developer, a health information technology exchange, a health information technology network? Or do you mean an exchange as an entity, a network as an entity, or developer as an entity? This is about being clarity. And if you look at the usage of network and exchange, which is what, if you went back to the Google Doc, you could see that we've actually drawn out the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different usages of the term exchange. You can see it's used differently.
So, Andy, those are written in lowercase, in the broad sense. If we go back to Mark's screen,
yep.
It's just really clear the way it's written to me there. By the Cures Act.
Okay, look,
it's not defining right in that sentence. It's not defining HIE or HIN. It's saying a network, an exchange of type, a developer, a provider.
It's actually saying a health information technology developer, comma, exchange, comma, network, which, you know, with the best will of the world, could be read in several different ways. And if you look at the usage of HIE and HIN elsewhere in Cures, it's not used in that way. It's not used consistently. And Mark said it's not used consistently. I'm not sure I understand why you are resisting bringing clarity.
This is Michael. I'm going to ask a different way. So in the proposal that Andy has, an exchange is an act, a network is an individual or entity. What under network, where is there loopholes, or what is left out under those four different points under networks that would allow someone to perform this act or to be a part of a group that performs this act that isn't covered? So what are we missing that would allow somebody? Because I understand, Cynthia, what you're saying about future-proofing, and I think Andy's agreeing with you, and I think we're all agreeing with you. What if you look at those four pieces to say that you have to satisfy one or several of the following, what's missing? Is there something missing there? Because to me, it's not narrowing. It's actually clarifying, but without narrowing it. To me, if you are exchanging information, you're going to fall into one of these points or potentially multiple of those points. what are we, is there something we're missing that would be of concern that we could add to it? Because I understand the clarity piece, and there are lots of definitions, and I don't, whether it's capital or lowercase, to me is really, we're being asked to define these terms, and they were put in the text in this way. What is missing? That's what, I guess what I'm asking the group. What is missing from those four bullet points? Or do we need to add a fifth, or do we need to change a fourth, or do whatever? What is missing that we need to add to make sure that it's broad enough? Because honestly, and I know everybody's probably still reading, or no good, I'm not on mute. I thought I was talking to myself for a little bit. I'm sure everyone's still reading. But what I read when I saw this in the Google Doc yesterday, or early this morning actually, was that this was trying to accomplish exactly what we've been discussing, which is attempting to, one, clarify without narrowing, but also to be able to make sure that we're covering all the entities that need to be covered in future-proofing this, because that is, it is difficult to do because we don't know what it will be defined as in the future. But what is there anything, Cynthia or John or Cheryl or Andy or Mark, that we're missing in here that would allow a person or a group, whether vertically integrated or whatever, to escape without being held accountable?
This is John. I cannot think of an example. I had the same question, and I just want to point out that it, like several calls ago, and probably several since, I argued that this definition is so broad as to take in a bunch of unintended organizations, but in as much as no one has an appetite for making it more narrow, I have just let that point drop. So the point I'm trying to make is there's a degree to which we're trying to reach consensus. So I cannot think of any examples of any organization that would not meet this definition that we think should. I could probably think of a ton that meet this definition that we don't intend to, but that's just the way it is.
Okay, so the thing that I am concerned about in the narrowness of the definition of the health information networks is it makes it seems like that that it's a broader based network versus a one player into a network or into the pipe. It seems as if it's defined as the administrative controlling policy setting, agreement setting, that it's actually almost protectionism for network as it exists today in some tighter forms versus the participants of entities that simply exchange or network patient health information. There's a lot of factors in those four points that
so maybe
appear narrow. So that's my feedback just as I read it, and that's top of mind.
Just a point of clarification about that is that we use the language about unaffiliated individuals or entities in the definition of health information network because if you think about it, if there's not that like that aspect or something like that, and you're just talking about a one-to-one exchange of information, then there's nothing to keep provider from being considered a health information network because every time they share data with another provider or with a patient, you could say that they would be a network. And it seems like, again, I understand. I'm just trying to say that congressional and or the intent of in reading the legislation is that there are four actors. And a point that will be confusing, again, they're your recommendations. If you make health information exchange the verb, the act of accessing, transmitting, we already define exchange within access exchange or use, the terminology used by Congress.
But Mark, this doesn't say that.
Well, it doesn't say what?
it doesn't make it just the act. It also says all the organisation conducting that act. Look at the definition of HIE.
Okay. Oh, I see that. So, but you don't think that would create confusion in the market that you're defining HIE as both an act and an organization?
Well, we put that in purely because of the feedback that I got from Cynthia and John last time we went through this. No more confusion than there is right now, put it that way. But to Cynthia's absolute point there, and she, you make a very good point, Cynthia, you're saying that the only people who can exchange are a network. Well, that doesn't quite make sense. I agree with you, which is why 2 and 4 were drafted the way they are. But I would draw your attention to the very, very last piece, which is around the broader definition of the term actor, okay? And the original drafting of CURES was actors regulated by the information and blocking provision include healthcare providers, developers, exchanges, and networks, okay? And actually, my suggestion there, Cynthia, to meet absolutely your fear and the future proofing is we just simply say that actors include all those who create, store, curate, conduct an exchange, or otherwise process EHI. And I've put the drafting in there for you to look at your leisure as well. It's not on screen right now. It's right down the bottom if someone wanted to look at it. But and that was deliberately done, Cynthia, because of your concern. But we just need to make...
Is the real issue here, let's go up 30,000 feet, okay?
Yep.
Exchanges, networks, developers all come into the bucket on information blocking up to $1 million fine per occurrence, as I understand from the rule. Providers have a to-be-determined penalty with the Inspector General for information blocking. Right now, the challenge is providers, the whole reason why we're here is that Congress was fed up with providers keeping the patient information within their health system and not sharing it, that they have the flexibility as we live in a mobile and transient world and we move across 50 states, just try to take a flight any day and the airlines are full and we move across health payer networks, we move across systems when we go skiing in Colorado and somebody tears an ACL, right? Everybody needs to go into different systems. So we need access to our information, needs to be given to the patient. Is the real issue here and the real concern is where a provider goes into that bucket, and if a provider exchanges information, is it the fear of being held accountable $1 million per occurrence as then being defined as an exchange or a network? Like what? Why are we going through these machinations? You know, is it that we just need to have most favored nations and hold everybody accountable for up to $1 million per occurrence, and then we don't have to, like, even go through these exercises? But I'm trying to understand the big picture. You know, patients just need access to their information, and we're entangled in defining these subsets of groups as we see them today, and why not just hold everybody accountable to the same most favored nation, and then do we even care?
Well, I think the only reason we are is because CURES calls them out as specific actors, and the regulations they're currently drafted not as clear as it could be. And I actually generally didn't think this would be even anything remotely contentious. We'll just go, okay, fine, we need a bit of clarity, move on. I'm kind of surprised we've been having this conversation.
Well, you know, that's my question. 30,000 read. Why are we going down into the weeds when, you know, is it protectionism for a party? You know, why don't we just hold anybody who exchanges their network's information accountable?
How does the proposed definition not do exactly that? Is it okay to throw some specific examples up against this definition? Like, for example, I run the Indiana Health Information Exchange. I look at this definition and I clearly fit in number 2, I think about other because we let me find it. We provide a service that enables or facilitates health information exchange. That's what our organization does. We might need some other bullets, but we do that. So then I think about Commonwell or SureScripts. I mean, they all do 1, 2, 3, or 4. And then I get to any provider that runs a private HIE, they fit the definition. And you can just keep going from there, right?
So just a point to think about with 3 or 4, Andy, it looks like with what you drafted, you pretty much took our definition of HIN in 1 and 2, and then you made 3 and 4 the same, but with affiliated individuals. Is that right? I'm just trying.
Exactly. I was standing on the shoulders of giants. Yeah.
Okay. So as far as unintended consequences that I know all of you are concerned about, or John especially is concerned about, if you think about, like I said, we were careful to try to make unaffiliated individuals clear, but really the goal is that Congress is clear that providers should be treated differently than developers, exchanges, and networks. So if you think about a hospital system, and you're saying that a network would include 2 or more affiliated individuals, that would just mean a few doctors getting together and sharing information would all be potentially a network.
Well, but okay, so Mark, before we belly off down that one, okay? Something like Commonwealth, they're all members, so they count as being affiliated, okay? Because the term affiliated and unaffiliated is not defined. And the penalties are maximal. It's not like you're mandating $1 million penalty. It's not like, you know, everyone automatically gets it if they're found guilty. So I think that's an overread.
We do define unaffiliated in the preamble, though. We have an extensive discussion about what we mean by that.
Yeah, I get that, but please don't point me at the preamble. We're trying to make it clear in the regulation. And that's why you put everyone in one place, they're in one place. And Cynthia makes a very good point around vertically integrated organizations, which are, let's say, a large retailer who wants to provide care services, okay? They wouldn't fall underneath this, even though they are, spread across the country, have a greater reach than any health information network, potentially. A national retailer who wants to provide primary care services wouldn't be compassed by this. So that's why I added the drafting at the end. We're doing something else now.
No, I was just providing some background here.
Okay. Yeah, and I agree with that point. I guess I'm sorry, Andy, I didn't notice that you had added the affiliated, because I thought we had already discussed this point in a prior meeting, and we had all agreed that we needed to keep in the unaffiliated.
That's why they're all there.
Yeah, because if you add in, the affiliated, that's which, as it does in the preamble, I think that, some of the questions that we need to answer based on the use cases are the one that you just mentioned with the hospital and the doctors. Is that considered a network? The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association that's got a franchise and licensees, is that a network? What are we really talking about in terms of affiliated versus non-affiliated? Maybe it's defining that.
Do we see them? Do we think they should be treated in a different way, first of all?
Well, I don't necessarily think from a philosophy perspective they should be treated a certain way, but there are concerns, and providers have them because we've heard them. And so do so would the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association, where we have multiple licensees in the same area. So without some sort of protection, what's stopping Blue Shield of California requesting data from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Anthem of California on the same population for someone that's not a covered member. But that's where it becomes an issue. And what does that mean and how does that work? Because it could be an anti-competitive issue.
Why would this impact that one way or the other? I'm confused.
Well, because if they're affiliated and there becomes a request to share data at that level, then basically we may be in a position of having to share contracted rates with a competitor that's in our own market with another Blue plan, which today isn't allowed.
Okay, but I thought what was getting put in place with these regulations was actually to level that playing field and say that we want price transparency. So price information is included in the definition of electronic health information. That's the definition of the scope of data. Well, what we've done here, we've said whether you're affiliated or unaffiliated, you cannot block that information. We're not going to treat you any differently. You have to allow information to be passed between. I think you're saying, well, hang on, there's actually a concern here with price information being shared, although the reading of we'll talk about this more tomorrow when we go through price transparency, but the
right.
The reading
and
of EHI is it has to be individual, so it wouldn't necessarily say an organization couldn't just get another organization's entire price charge masters or contracts or something, because they only get it, could see it in the context of a particular individual disposition. So I'm a bit confused by why that would be a concern. But I'm trying to be really, really careful how we partition
the granularity to which the data is available that, you know, we get concerned about. If we were sharing episodes of care or some basis of price that's meaningful based on the patient's own experience, that's one thing. But in terms of data sharing, and you know this, what they ask for is all the detail level on all the claims and all the claim lines, which really gets into more of the reimbursement rates. And again, I bring up the whole issue that we've had brought to us before from the Department of Justice, and that especially when we're playing in the same regional or geographic area, it's done nothing but drive prices up by sharing that with a competitor.
Well, you know, there are differing opinions on that, Cheryl. So I think the big issue here is that we have to do price transparency. And there are plenty of other arguments in the opposite direction. You can look at the food industry. You can look at the retail industry. You know, you can look at a lot of different industries that show the competitiveness of having transparency. You know, opacity does not serve the consumer well.
Okay. So we're going to talk about this tomorrow, okay? Price transparency is tomorrow. And we are going to address it. We absolutely are, okay?
But I think Cheryl raises a good point about looking at the networks affiliated and unaffiliated and why it needs to be broad. I mean, I think, we get to see a lake.
Well,
that point just watered down?
sorry about that. That's my bad.
Cynthia, why would we differentiate between whether the entities were affiliated or unaffiliated for the purposes of whether that implicates information blocking? Because I thought what we wanted to achieve was it doesn't matter whether you're affiliated or unaffiliated. We want information to be shared.
Exactly. Agree with you there, Andy.
Okay. So this drafting, as it currently stands, treats them all equally. Now, I know that Cheryl has a concern over that, okay? Particularly around price transparency. And I'd like us to litigate through that tomorrow so that we could actually say, okay, there's an exception maybe for price transparency, or we decide actually there's no exception. But in general, for sharing information about a patient where the patient wants it to be shared and it's in the best interest of that patient, it doesn't matter whether the endpoints are affiliated or not.
Okay, could I have clarity on where providers fit? Because if providers are sharing and exchanging information, aren't they then an exchange as well?
Okay, so some providers
and network as well. Aren't they then exchanging and networking in the broader sense of the word? And so wouldn't they fall under the similar penalties?
Okay. So some providers don't provide any kind of exchange activities or operate a network to make that happen. Some providers do. Some providers operate a private network across multiple entities within their organization and between other groups like physician groups, et cetera, that they're associated with. What we're trying to do here is just simplify that out a little bit. I think where you're going is right, is that a provider who is also a network performing exchange between affiliated and or unaffiliated entities could actually be implicated by being an actor in several different ways, both as a provider and a network. And that's absolutely true. They could. So what is kind of my view at the moment?
I just pulled up an example that explains our position to what we're talking about. And I could take it off. But I just wanted to say that we do address these very points in preamble as why we proposed it a certain way. And just real quickly, Andy, what we're saying is that a provider could be considered a network or exchange, but they'd have to be acting functionally as a network and exchange or exchange that as we define them. That's the main point.
So that's the same thing. But let's say a provider is operating functionally as a network as well, okay? On what basis would you seek to issue sanctions against them under the current drafting of the regulation? As a network or as a provider or as both?
Is that for you're asking me?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to. As we talk about in the example, you'd have to look at. So again, I want to emphasize. It'd be really. I think Congress. You can fault the Cures Act on many levels, I guess, if you wanted to, but I think Congress is very clear that providers should be treated differently than exchanges, networks, and developers. The language is pretty clear there. So what we're saying in our preamble that we discussed this is that you look at what the actions are that are being taken. If the entity is acting as a provider, they would be treated as a provider. If the entity is acting under our definition of network, you know, with two unaffiliated entities or individuals and sharing information in that way, then they would be subject to the penalties that would tie to a network or exchange. It's all based on the function regarding networks and exchanges.
Okay, so let's not get too deep into this, but there is that slight gray area, I think, where you have a provider whose function is a network between two affiliated entities. So let's say it's an integrated care delivery network with a primary care group and an acute facility, and they're not routinely sharing information between those two or across their network. Within their own provider organization, even though they are two discrete entities, they could potentially be implicated on both fronts. And at some point, you're going to have to decide which of those actors you're going to sanction them under.
Right. I can't speak to any examples that are outside the discussions we had in preamble, but I will say, I mean, that's more of an enforcement issue. What we're trying to deal with here is creating clear definitions for the four actors Congress identified that can be used for OIG to enforce the regulation. I think you're right. It's very possible that there could be an entity that acts both as a provider, I think is what you're saying, and a network. But if you think about it, the conduct probably would not be the same conduct because you'd be looking at the function of the actor. So you'd look at there could be two different conducts, by the same actor, but they would just be working as different functions from the same entity. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I understand the words you're saying. I think it largely doesn't matter for this conversation because this particular organization that's operating the boat is covered and implicated, and then during enforcement you'll discern which vector you're going to enforce them on. Got it. to Cynthia's point 40 minutes ago, that there are vertically integrated organizations who are ever expanding. Are we covered in these definitions they currently stand for those organizations? I'm not sure, and my reading was we weren't, which is why if you scroll all the way to the bottom of this document, sorry, Mark, in the section around, you know, maybe are these four actors which are suggested, it's not suggested that those are the only four actors. Next page, please, Mark. So, Cynthia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, hey. Can you have a look at this regulatory text recommendation here that Mark's got up on the screen? Because this was kind of seeking to channel you, and please correct it if it's not.
Also, I'm only seeing a piece of this, and then Mark, if there's some way also that you can just send us what you had in the preamble, because I didn't get to see it before you took it off the screen.
Yeah, sure, Cynthia. You can just if you look at the under each section, if you look at the HIN, HIE, I have some page. I'll scroll back up. But the page numbers from preamble referenced, and that's where I was. So you could just look through those pages.
Okay. Yep. I'm on an iPad. Sorry, it doesn't work like my computer.
Oh,
so,
no problem. I just want to make sure that everyone reads the examples we provided.
Okay. I'll have to pull that up. Okay.
Link
so
to my browser right now. It's a preamble. Okay.
So if you look on screen, I'm just...
Yeah, and I'll just kill some time, Cynthia, while you're pulling this up, just to note that actor is a term that is not used in CURES, I believe. It was just a term that we used to define those four actors that Congress talked about. So
yep.
It's a term of art. So that's the point I wanted to make there.
A term of art?
Well, maybe not a term of art, but it's a term that we use to refer to the entities or individuals that Congress identified in CURES.
So, no, it's actually a pretty good term. It's fine. I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Well, I just, you know, I'm reading this and, I guess, again, to say network and exchange information, again, I would just use the words in the small n and the small e.
Okay.
And I also think that it should be consistent with what HHS says. So I don't, you know, like here it has regulatory text recommendation,
well,
but it doesn't have what the regulatory text says.
There is none. No, this is none. This is additional to cover your very real concerns, which
mm-hmm.
I thought as a group we agreed with. So this is
mm-hmm.
this is additional suggestion to ONC that they put in something like this to make
yeah.
it absolutely clear that whilst we do have
mm-hmm.
these entity types defined, because that's what we were told to do, the actual intent of Congress is for all these activities to be implicated if you don't do them. I was channeling my inner Cynthia.
Now, Andy, don't get angry. I'm going to pull over just for comparison how we define actor in the rule, just so everyone understands.
Yep. And in our discussions, I think we specifically said, look, tie it down to just a certified health IT developer. That's over-narrowing. A healthcare provider has a particular meaning. We want to make it clear that these vertically integrated type organizations, it includes them too. And that's why rather than talking about organization types, we're saying it's if you do this stuff with EHI, then you're included. And frankly, if we recommend this, well, whatever happens in the end game, it gives you actually a lever to go and investigate this.
I'm just curious, though, Andy, how do you reconcile that with what Congress said in Cures and that specifically calls out these four actors?
Oh, it's well done to specifically call these out, to that it, I think it has to use the word includes. It doesn't say to be only. And this group in discussion has raised the fact that we have concerns over other organisation types who are handling patient information and will be providing patient care services who don't fall under the classic definitions which have been used hitherto. And we want regulations in place which stand the test of time.
Right. This is Michael. The one thing I wanted to say there was I think the intent of Congress was to not narrow it to just these four groups. And somebody can correct me if I was wrong, was to make sure that information was being shared freely and not being blocked. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is to make sure that if you're a group, an individual, an entity, whatever, that is sharing information, that has information to exchange, to share, to transmit, to create, whatever, that you will not block that information. And I think in some points we're trying to narrow it so that we meet Congress's words in the Cures Act, and in other areas we're trying to make sure it's broad. I think that we need to make sure that patients and providers have the information they need to deliver care, to receive care, to pay for care, whatever it might be. And I think that, you know, however we define HIE and HIN, if it's done right, everyone that shares information will fall into a category, which is much better than what we have today. Whether it's decided that any time a provider is doing this, they're considered a provider, fine. And if they're information blocking, whether they're considered a provider or a network or exchange, they're being held accountable, which is what we don't have today. If they're a network and they're doing something they're not supposed to do, or they're blocking something they're not supposed to block, they're being held accountable. What I'm trying to decide is there anything that we've proposed so far that would allow someone to escape accountability? And if so, we need to put it in there. If not, we need to come to some type of agreement as to what that looks like.
Yeah, I think that's a really well said point. And, you know, I think that's really the intent here, is to say that this is about giving patients and physicians total access. And that's, you know, that's inclusive of their whole record. That means physician notes, it means your MRIs, it means your labs, it means the ability to move across systems. And we have cloud computing today. I even would argue, you know, biggest thing is you get an MRI or you get an X-ray and you can't get access to it, and the CD-ROMs don't work, and patients have to leave their homes and go physically try to grab this information, which is ridiculous to have to grab digital information and waste of time and labor and employers losing them for half days off of work chasing down this info. Is the provider held accountable? Help me understand this. So the biggest thing is a patient gets referred, they get seen, they get tests, they get labs, they get filmed. And then they have to go see the specialist, or they want to go outside of that hospital network. And today, it is so difficult for them to get that information to make it relevant for their referral care and get access to that care. So what we want to make sure is empowerment of the patient that says, look, I could click on here. If I can't get access, I can report it, and I can hold somebody really accountable for not giving me access so I can move and be seen by a specialist within the next 2 days. You know, it's real time and digital. So I think the big thing here is what Mike said, is we want to make sure that we don't use that, however the words are, that the players involved are all held accountable.
I just to chime in real quickly, I'm not going to weigh in on whether you should or shouldn't make that recommendation. Just my read of Cures and the position we took in our proposed rule was that Congress does not take that that very, very, very broad approach and does identify who they are talking about, which is developers, providers, networks, and exchanges. And just to be clear, that seems to me what CIRA says. So I think it would be very difficult. And you'd also want to make sure you think about who, if you're saying everyone who touches health information should be covered, I don't know how you would define it, but just think about the consequences. I know, John, you've talked about this in the past.
Right, but okay, so taking that a bit further then, so who are we trying to say it's okay for them to information block? If you're following that logic, yes, everyone should be held accountable. I mean, there's nobody whether they're part of a provider group, whether they're part of a health IT developer, whether they're part of a network or exchange, whatever a position is, nobody should be able to allow the blocking of information. Is that not what we're trying to do here? I thought we were trying to prevent information blocking.
That's a good question, Mike. Mark, who is it that we say is okay to information block?
Look, so we're not saying let's just to be clear, ONC's position is not to say it's ever okay to information block. I'll just restate kind of where we came from. We wrote a report to Congress in 2016 that said information blocking is a huge problem. And we laid out a rationale and potential definition and worked with Congress to come up with the Cures Act. And in Cures, Congress provides a definition of information blocking and identifies four distinct actors, which are developers, providers, networks, and exchanges, that would be actors that could fall under the information blocking provision. What ONC has been tasked with is coming up with definitions and identifying clearly how to define those actors and how to define the conduct that would fall under the definition of information blocking. So I definitely cannot get into a conversation about anyone's allowed to information block. That's what we're doing is, and then also of course identifying the exceptions which Congress asked us to do. So that's where we're coming from. But I'm just saying, as far as legislative interpretation, I understand this group, you know, and I think it's great. Like, we want we agree with you. We want the sharing and flowing of information, and we think that's paramount. It's extremely important. But I'm just trying to focus on the fact that we need to work within what Congress actually said in Cures. If you want it to be, actually implemented the proposals, the recommendations.
So again, this is Michael. What are we proposing that doesn't fall within there? I guess I'm confused. I'm just trying to figure out how we can get to a definition that's somewhat clear. Because to be quite honest, the HIE and HIN definitions, when we all read them in the beginning, were not clear. So we're trying to provide clarity and make sure that we're holding the groups accountable that need to be held accountable. What are we doing that isn't within the framework that you're talking about, other than trying to provide clarity? I'm not trying to get to a point and have recommendations.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure if you are. I just want to make, I'm not sure what your recommendations will end up being in the end. All I wanted to say was that based on our read of Cures, we needed to identify and define these four categories of actors that would fall under the information blocking provision. And based on the fact that Congress clearly said that providers penalty-wise should be treated differently than developers, networks, and exchanges, our read and the way we made our proposals was that there needs to be some distinction between a provider definition and the definition of network, exchange, and developer. That's just our approach, but I guess I'm just trying to make that very clear. But your recommendations are your recommendations.
I think before we're talking past each other slightly, I think, Mark, for where we're all coming from, you've got those definitions because of how you need to do enforcement. And that makes perfect sense, to treat a provider differently to how you treat another entity for many, many good reasons. So if you put the enforcement
Can you help me process, with the reasons? Like, why would a provider be treated differently? And would the provider be treated differently for less or more of a fine? You know, why wouldn't they all be treated the same? I guess I'm trying to understand why that carve
out. Okay, because I think if we can just park for a moment the fact that a provider might also be an HIN, okay, but you actually, providers come in many, many, many different shapes and sizes, and you may inadvertently be overly punitive on a smaller provider who, for whatever reason, is unable at the moment, and you want to work through things with them. But you know, the big ones which are guilty of information blocking, for whatever reason, would also fall under the HIN type definitions anyway. And so you have that much bigger enforcement stick. I'm not trying to excuse it in any way. I'm just so I can recognize that 21st Century Cures did actually have a difference in how the intent, okay, in how it expressed it for a developer, an exchange or a network versus a provider. Because with a provider, they said that if it's conducted by a provider, the provider knows that the practice is unreasonable and is likely to interfere, okay? Whereas with a developer, an exchange or a network, it's not that you just say no, it's that they should have known. So there is a difference in how Congress was thinking about providers as opposed to, let's just say, other actors. That was my understanding.
But isn't it up to a $1 million per occurrence, up to, that's determined by the Inspector General? So, you know, if it's just, you know, one small entity, wouldn't the Inspector General still have the power of that authority? And isn't it mostly the information of, isn't information blocking really mainly taking place by providers not wanting you to go across the street to a competitive hospital?
I'm actually not sure. I think there's certainly an argument that it sometimes happens, like, maybe a lot happens like that. But I think there's also issues from developers, exchanges, and networks. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, obviously it is with the others as well. But my thought is the ambiguity would be, I don't even know if it's clear to me as a consumer, is the penalty supposed to be less than what's defined by the HINs and HIEs, or is it supposed to be more than what's already defined up to $1 million per person?
Well, that's a good point, but the problem is we have the legislation makes a distinction here between a provider and the others in terms of the intent. However, what we're talking about here is the definitions inside regulation, which is, you know, something which is a bit more, well, we can make recommendations to change that. But the legislation is enacted. We can't change that.
And just a note, we do have a request for information about provider disincentives, which you all are welcome. It's being discussed in group two. But, of course, you're welcome to comment on that. And, you know, I see where you're coming from, Cynthia, but I will say that, like Andy said, you know, whatever Congress's intent was, I can't speak to that, but they are pretty clear about at least the penalties for developers, networks, and exchanges, and we are still considering the penalties or disincentives for providers. So, you know, whatever their reasoning was, is kind of outside our ONC scope right now.
Didn't CMS say something in their rules and regulations around penalties? Up to, like, was it 5% of Medicare and Medicaid payments or something like that with theirs? There are some other penalties around for providers lurking around, for sure, outside of the fact that these haven't been defined. But I have to say, Cynthia, I'd like your input on this one. 21st Century Cures talks clearly about health information technology developer. And my understanding was that that was meant to, the original intent, certainly of some of the congressional members who were involved in drafting, was that it was not meant to be restrictive to only those developers of certified health IT. It was actually meant to be all health IT developers. In the current regulation drafting, and Mark, keep me honest, it seems to be a slight recasting of health IT developer to be only those developers of certified health IT. And maybe that's a tripping over of how enforcement would happen from ONC, et cetera, as well. And I think the original intent, and it's one that I think I personally agree with, is that we should be looking at anybody who's developing health IT, because as technology is moving, the entry bar to get into selling software platforms and services which handle patient information and can control patient information and can restrict patient information has lowered a lot. It's a lot more straightforward to do. And many of those actors have absolutely no intent of becoming certified health IT within the meaning of being part of the certification program of ONC. And many of them actually don't want to. And we may be inadvertently missing a section of health IT, which is growing, because you know the numbers of health IT developers who were delivering into healthcare organisations to handle patient information that weren't certified 3 or 4 years ago was far smaller than it is now, and it's going to carry on growing. Oh, John Kansky, can you hear us? Sorry, John seems to be peeing, saying he's got a problem.
No, I think I'm back. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, you can. Yes.
Yeah, I was momentarily, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me, but I think the issue was on my end.
I was going to say, I had to pay them off to mute you.
Good idea.
But the health IT developer one, I welcome everyone's input on this, because I kind of think it might be a bit of a blind spot we've got in the current drafting.
John, can I just weigh it, just give you a little back, I want you to talk after, but just as far as why we tied it to certified health IT, that you have to have at least one product certified at the time of the conduct. If you look at Cures, I'm happy to pull up that language over. In the Inspector General Authority, which is, you know, who's actually enforcing information blocking, the language is pretty clear. It says a health information technology developer of certified health information technology or other entity offering certified health information technology. So just as, you know, we need to, you know, enforce this eventually, and Congress seemed pretty clear about the enforcement authority for OIG. So go ahead.
No, you're right, it does. And I think that when the legislation was drafted, then that would have been a largely mutually inclusive group, okay? But things have moved. Now, I'm channeling my inner Cynthia again, okay? Technology is moving. There are people who are going to be engaged in handling patient information, creating patient information, and blocking patient information that we didn't even think of 3 years ago. And it's kind of behoven on us to raise that, so that we can either say, okay, sucks to be us, but we can't, or, oh, yeah, actually, we can do something about this.
So, Andy, is your concern that there's going to be HIT developers that are important and relevant in interoperability that don't need to be certified for any reason?
Yes. In fact, I'll be straight with you. I know
yep.
of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I immediately thought of, so...
Don't mention names.
No, I'm not mentioning any names, I thought of a category, and yep. So, sincere question. So, anybody that develops an app for a Android or iOS platform that's designed to be used by consumers, that there's no reason currently that data has to, has to be certified technology, right?
Absolutely.
So that's especially the way the government's thinking. Go ahead.
Yep. I'll give you another one. I know of at least two companies who are building fairly sophisticated, both ambulatory and inpatient EMRs that they want to bring to market, but they don't want to sell it. They want to give it away so they can, and it's very, very elastic compute based, so they can get access to large volumes of patient information and give it away for nothing. It doesn't need to be certified.
Right, and the last thing that we want to do is to put the entire industry under very clear but arguably regulation that requires data sharing completely, and then leave some important actors with a business opportunity that's created by the regulation. I think that's the most important thing I've heard said on any one of these calls.
I told you, it's my inner Cynthia. It wasn't me.
Could you repeat it? I missed it. I'm sorry. I stepped out. I just came back. Yeah, I heard something. I'm like, oh, I missed it.
Okay. John, do you want to repeat it to just channel it? So
sure. I'll take a shot at it.
Both classes as well.
Both what?
Both classes of actors that we just thought of.
Oh, the two examples?
Yeah.
Sure. So it's important, and you can fix it after I say it, Andy. So it's important that we don't have a limited definition of developer that is limited only to those that develop certified technology, because if we do that, there are important developers, I'm air quoting, because we're talking about definitions here, there'll be important developers that would not have any reason that their technology would need to be certified. For example, anybody developing a mobile app for an iOS or Android platform designed to be used by the consumer for their healthcare data would not need to be certified. And Andy offered an example of organizations developing EHRs that are not expected to be sold but expected to be given away. So the problem being that if everybody in the industry except those developers is subject to this regulation, the regulation actually amplifies their business opportunity of not sharing data.
So I think it's a really good point. I guess just in your recommendations, it might need to be more. You might want to think about if you want to move forward with that recommendation, whether it would be, because, you know, like we talked about, the language in CURIA seems pretty clear, so you might want to, you know, recommend a statutory amendment or something like that, which I think is potentially possible.
So this is Cheryl. I have a question. Is it, would it be an option to go another way to say that if you're going to provide any type of system that utilizes PHI, that the system has to be certified? I mean, wouldn't that be another option? So that would get take care of those two situations and many others.
Potentially.
Because I think that's a better way to handle the situation, because it's going to continue to grow. And at the end of the day, if that's the issue, then any system that utilizes personal health information would really need to be certified. And then it'll be covered by this rule. And they won't be allowed to do information blocking.
Okay, so we're actually saying that any information technology that processes electronic health information has to be certified.
No, wait a minute. But doesn't that require a whole bunch of certification guidelines that don't exist?
Yep. Yeah. I was just channeling it first. I wasn't saying I agree.
Okay. No. I think that's a problem.
Right. And then every client system out there would have to be certified, which is going to add more millions of dollars onto the cost of this. That's not what I was getting at. I was saying any system that exchanges data, that basically would be used to exchange data for personal health information, which is different based on what we just did today.
Okay,
but,
Cheryl,
but you just said that
every system that every health information exchange in the country uses has to be certified. They're not today, and those guidelines don't exist.
From certain patients, there are certain patients that have chosen to utilize applications and services where they have the terms and conditions, and they believe they're far superior to today's existing EHR software
absolutely
developed.
True.
And so
yep.
they're basically catapulting, saying, what I get today from my hospital and my provider is unacceptable and unusable, and I'm going to go over here to this new player that is very clear about their terms and conditions of my use, and I'm going to choose to select them and the doctors and the accessibility to get access to nurses, care, PTs, whatever. So they get full comprehensive care today outside of the certification program. And the patient makes a decision to make that choice. So, you know, I think the fact of the matter, again, it goes back to Stagecoach of America is, you know, what we're trying to do is trying to get Congress in HHS was fed up with patients not getting their information in today's systems released to them. And in the same sense, we're having new, novel, innovative, superior products and services delivered to the millennials, for instance, that aren't going to put up with what they're getting today. So I just think we also could drastically hurt innovation.
And that's kind of why I was saying, rather than mandating certification, mandate that you don't information block. Because then we're not placing additional hoops to jump through. We're just saying you can't information block.
Right.
Agreed.
So within, to Mark's point, within the constraints that we're given in terms of the legislation, how do we make that recommendation?
Well, I think we make the recommendation that OMC work out how to make it and take it forward. I think in our discussion, if you look in the notes I tried to capture, because this isn't the first time we've talked about this, the technology has moved substantially in the last 3 years. And this legislation was kind of, you know, it was enacted at the end of 2016. So the playing field is a slightly different level of muddiness than it was then. And so it's fairly reasonable to go back and, you know, Mark just raised it and said there could be a statutory amendment that just makes this a bit clearer. And if this group recommends it, it gives ONC a basis to say, look, we've received a recommendation. And it also allows us to, I think, address some of the issues around self-developers, which we've got in other regulations here. And to Cynthia's point, the large organizations who are looking to vertically and horizontally both integrate and spread, grow, and where they're actually saying, actually, we're not going to go and buy some platform and do this. We're just going to build our own. And we don't need to care. No, to Cheryl's point, it's not about exchange necessarily, because they have no intention of exchanging information. No, information is power. Well, that's precisely the mindset we want to not allow to get in a place, because we want to promote information sharing by preventing information blocking. If I try and capture all these discussions in here, will people have a look at it in private? John, Cynthia, Cheryl?
Thinking.
Thank you. Mike, are you still there to lead us through to the next section?
I'm still here, but remember, I don't have access to the documents, so I don't know.
Okay.
And I know what we're talking about, but I can't see the part of the agenda or leave this anymore.
Where did we get to on HIE and HIN definition? I thought I heard that we were kind of okay-ish, but if the consensus is we actually don't want to go forward with the recommendation I've outlined there, then we can go back to our original definition that we had revised to.
Andy, if you're waiting for somebody to say something, I'll help you out there. I'm not sure what I have to say is super helpful. One, I feel, to be honest, a little bit beaten into submission on debating that one any longer. I feel like the original definitions were incredibly broad and would take in all the organizations that we want to take in and then some. There'll be some complexity in terms of people trying to interpret. I think mushing them together into one is just as broad and only clearer in the sense that there's one fuzzy definition to interpret instead of two. For that reason, I'm slightly
okay.
In favor of the latter.
I don't want to, generally, John, I don't want to browbeat you on this one, and because you come from one of these organizations, and you understand it probably better than majority of other people on the committee, let alone on this call. Can you have a go at changing this and tying it down a bit more?
Well, so let me speak to it from that perspective, since you're sort of inviting me to. So on the one hand, you know, we take off our hats when we come onto these task forces. So I'm trying to speak from my experience as a guy that runs a health information exchange, but not speak as a health information exchange. But if I put that hat back on, part of me says, well, geez, I meet this definition for about 16 different reasons. So clearly our organization is going to be regulated by this. If the definition is overly broad and ends up taking in not only every whatever the heck an HIN is and whatever the heck an HIE is, but anybody that, you know, looks at data, thinks about data, or you know, moves it from here to there, then I guess, great, misery loves company. I mean, we're all going to be regulated by the same rule. So for selfish reasons, the intent of the rule is to define as an HIE. I'm the poster child. Our organization is the poster child for an HIE. I'm not sure what the poster child for an HIN is, and without starting to name names, we can't really sort that out. But to the point that we've talked about, to the point of, and that's what I meant by beating into submission. That's not you, Andy. That's just we've gone around in circles so many times on this. Is that I'm not sure what the relevance is of one fuzzy definition of an HIE and one fuzzy broad definition of an HIN. Debating those things separately seems pointless. So where you started this is, could I, for example, look at those definitions and try to make them narrower to describe what I know to be John Kansky's definition of an HIE and John Kansky's definition of an HIN? I'm sure I could do that, but I doubt that those would be well received, because they would be narrower, because I would be attempting to define two more specific classes of organizations.
And just to note that the proposed changes, Andy, that you made for John's forever, I mean, that is making it broader than what we currently have, if I'm reading it correctly.
Does it make it broader? I don't think it made it broader. I thought it made it exactly the same scope, just clearer.
Well, at least for HIN, we have the limiting factor of unaffiliated. But what you're saying is that you would want HIN to include unaffiliated and affiliated individuals. So really, you wouldn't even need that distinction. You would just say two or more individuals or entities, really.
Pretty much, actually. I was actually just looking at it to say unaffiliated or affiliated. Because in the current drafting in the proposed regulation, affiliated versus unaffiliated is exchange versus network, which doesn't make sense in an industry perspective.
Well, I don't think that's totally how we characterize it, and I would just refer you all to the preamble
really
discussion.
Let's go back and look at the existing version. Hang on. HIN is about unaffiliated. And then HIE is talks about a particular class of individuals or entities for a limited set of purposes, which personally I think is really kind of, yeah.
Right. Well, so all I'm saying is that the distinction you made wasn't totally accurate, but we welcome recommendations on how to clarify these definitions, of course.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. I was less accurate than I could have been on that one. By accident rather than intent.
No harm, no foul.
Oh, this is heavy work. Okay. Well, you know, frankly, John, if it makes things easier, we just remove the term unaffiliated or affiliated full stop from the HIN definition.
Yeah, I think that's helpful. I have to do what you're saying, and then I'll reread.
Yeah. Go down to it now.
So did 3 and 4 are gone?
Yeah, 3 and 4 are gone because there's no distinction between affiliated and unaffiliated, and that was the only delta.
Got it.
And just to put a finer point on what you're proposing, Andy, is really this is just our definition of HIN, and you just took out unaffiliated, the word. Really.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Because, yeah, something like, we keep saying Commonwealth, we'll just pick on Commonwealth, poor old Commonwealth again. They're an HIN, but they're affiliated. Well. You could argue, I suppose, but just makes it clearer.
Yeah, you're taunting me into the space that that I've resisted going and asking questions like what's an organization that substantially influences technology but doesn't do any of those other things? That's a health information network. So is HIMSS a health information network because they substantially influence technology?
I think this would be where you've got an operating organization which chooses technology but doesn't actually define the interface agreements.
Go ahead.
I could pick on poor old Commonwealth again, where you've got Commonwealth that falls into one. However, the actual technology decision is being run by MASS at the moment. You know, there's those kinds where you've got these slightly more complicated arrangements, especially in the state HIE space as well.
Well, this is why this is where the Kansky concept here is that good point. And if that's brought out in a preamble clearly, then great. But if you're HIMSS and you read this, they're going to go, oh, my gosh, am I a health information network? Because I think I substantially influence technology, and now I need to call my lawyer.
We could argue about the term use of the word substantial there, but that's a good point.
Well, and just a point, though, John, there would still have to be an interference with access exchange or use. You know, just because you are fall under one of the definitions of the actors, there still has to be that underlying conduct that's problematic.
Right, Mark. But if you run an organization that just found out you're defined as an actor in a major federal regulation, you now have a compliance task and three ring binders and six digit legal bills.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I agree with you. I was just saying that it, you know, there's still like whatever entity you're talking about, whether they are, you know, doing the types of things that would interfere with access, exchange, or use of electronic health information.
Actually, I think John's got a very good point here. It's the term substantially influence, I think, John, that you're tripping over. Provides, manages, control, I think you're fine with, right?
I believe that's true, yeah.
Yeah, and hey, I can see that, you know. That definition probably works better for you, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't know. How is it applied in the top one? Determines, oversees, administers, controls, or substantially influences policies. This one is even more.
Yeah.
Policies or agreements. Determines, oversees, administers. Yeah, I think substantially influences problematic, to be honest. Determines, oversees, administers, controls, or defines policies or agreements. So that's somebody. So you guys know that. Are you familiar with the terms framework versus network?
Yep.
So number one is a framework. Number two is a network.
Is a network. That. Yep.
And just to clarify, actually, I was wrong when I stated earlier. It looks like Andy, if there's any way to bring a redline version next time, that would be helpful because you did change. You did change quite a bit of the other language from our definition. So,
well, did I? Oh, my word. Well, I must have been feeling really enthused. Why did I do that?
Nice try, Andy.
Okay, let's go back and look at their definition.
Yes, this is really hard to see and compare, you know, without a red line. So I agree with that. If we can please have red lines compared to original text.
Okay. And when ONC provides me with technology that allows us to do that, I absolutely will. But yeah, the next version I will personally redline. Okay, so there's the original
Andy,
version.
Sorry, I will just a quick comment. I just wanted to weigh in that I definitely like where this is headed better than where we started. It's got a lot fewer words. It's a lot less subject to interpretation, and it's a lot easier to understand. And I don't think it leaves, trying to channel my inner Cynthia, I don't think it leaves anybody out.
And if you look at, thank you, John, if you look on screen right now, what's in red is the original version. And I'll be, it doesn't look that dissimilar, Mark, from what you had.
No, and Mark, they were just, I just wanted to be precise that there were changes to the original definition.
Mark, do you have anything that you want to feedback on the substantially influences, the possibility of deleting those words? Does that give you heartburn?
On that one, I'd have to look back. I'll read what we have in preamble, and I encourage you all to do the same. I think we talk about it some. So let me get back to you on that. I appreciate you asking.
And just on redline, classically a redline basically would be used in the new text, and you either scratch through a red line or have new red words that show the differences versus having.
I know. I will take my time, and I will extract everything from these documents, do a proper compare on them, and then provide everyone back with the markup. Okay.
Thanks. I know it's not built into the software, so sorry, Andy, on that one.
It's a really efficient use of my time. No problems at all. No, because look, we have to pull together a combined set of recommendations, so it needs doing it across all of them. So I'll do it in one place across them all. Okay. Mark.
Yep.
Okay. Can you get that the combination Google document? Get whoever was going to create it and send me the link to it, please.
You mean for the final recommendations document?
Well, the first draft of the final ones, just please. And
yeah.
And let
And let's go to public comment at this point.
Thanks, Sandy. Operator, can we open the line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to move your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And Andy, let's leave the phone number up for a few minutes, just because we didn't have a lot of time for them to dial in. Pretty heavy discussion. So
I'll stop sharing.
Operator, do we have anyone in the queue at this time?
There is no one in the queue.
I can't believe that the public doesn't have anything to say given the conversation they just heard.
My thought as well.
Andy and team?
Yes, ma'am.
I just think that, frankly, HHS's definition, the ONC's definition, is fitting, and I feel that using the capital sense of the terminologies of exchange and network is more narrowing, but that's just how I read it, because you're narrowing it into existing entities that are described as exchanges and networks in today's world. So I thought that the purpose of information, to prevent information blocking, is as described as they had with ONC. But, you know, I basically feel it, you know, right now it's been a bit of a swirly. So, where it landed is simpler, yes, but I, at least at first look, to me, it's narrower to a defined entity or two defined entity. So,
okay. Thanks for that. I think part of what you're seeing as well is myself, definitely John, I think others who these terms are used in very many different ways and are imbued with a sense of meaning in different places, in different contexts, in different ways. And we're seeking to normalize that meaning to a single definition whilst we can, because we recognize the churn it could well cause if we don't. Is that, John, is that a fair point?
It is, and I just want to point out that, to Cynthia, that it's in my organization's selfish best interest to have these definitions be extremely broad, because no matter what happens, we're gonna be covered by this. So in just the interest of what Andy said, trying to make them clear without leaving anybody out.
Okay, so just one thing on this too, though, is the change that you have, it only applies to exchange. And in what was previously there, it also had for access and use.
Yeah, it's because the definition of health information exchange would get updated to accessing, transmitting, processing, handling, or other such use of electronic health information. And then the definition around HIN is talking about capital H health information exchange. So the definition of HIN is by inclusion, including the revised definition of HIE. So you've got access, transmit, process, handling, or other such use.
Thank you for explaining that. So access, exchange, and use are all part of the definition of HIE. Got it.
Yeah. Well, access, transmit, processing, handling, use.
All Okay, I have a broad question which we could address tomorrow or when we do the pricing.
It's price transparency tomorrow. I'm excited.
I know, but just on this, where pricing information for services and payment information would be exchanged and networked.
Actually, it's just all that good, Cynthia. So,
part of HIEs and HINs today.
Sorry, can you just I'll just say that again from the top?
So, if I'm a patient and I need to know the price of something, and I need to know that my bill and my claims data, past, present, and future payment information. So,
yep.
If I want to have that digitally and comprehensively as a patient, like when I get after I've eaten my dinner at a restaurant, I get the bill and it matches the price on the menu.
Yep.
And I get it all comprehensively. So, HIEs and HINs in today's world, you know, explaining to the public or the consumer, are HIEs and HINs, as they are described as entities today, also considered pricing exchanges and networking of pricing and claims data, payment data?
My understanding is that in general, price information is not routinely shared. I mean, is that fair? Is that where you're going, Cynthia?
Well, it is shared today between the contract negotiations, between the rate cards, between the insurers and the payers.
Okay, not in an open way then.
My question to you is that sharing of that data as its provider to payer or and its patient information specific and its patient specific, that the entities that are sharing that information today, are they considered HIEs and or HINs? And developers, and we have providers in that queue as well. So could you please clarify?
Would they be considered HINs? I believe so, because they're in the where we've currently got to, then they are involved in the exchange, access, transmit, use, whatever, of electronic health information. And electronic health information, by inclusion, includes includes price information, not cost, but price.
So, I think to try to help explain, Cynthia, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So, if you are working for an employer group and that employer group has contracted with a vendor for a vendor transparency tool that makes supposedly all their pricing data available to the patient, and then that consumer transparency vendor would be considered a health information network. Is that what you're asking?
Well, that would also include, would that include the vendor and the payer and the provider as an HIN?
Well, you know, that's the difficulty. So the employer group is the payer, in this case, health plan contracted with the providers. They make the data available to the employer group based on the benefit plans the employer group chooses, and then the employer group hires the vendor for the consumer transparency. So today it's all handled through providing data to the employer group, and then the employer group works with the vendor to decide what they make available. So I'm not clear either, based on what we're saying here, if that consumer transparency vendor would then be considered a health information network. They're going to be receiving data from the employer group, because that's the way it's handled today, in order to provide that data and the consumer transparency to the member.
So I think they would.
If the provider or the payer doesn't provide the information to the transparency on the price, who's accountable for not providing information on pricing if it doesn't come from the provider-payer posting?
Right, but it's more than just provider-payer. That's my point. It's in this situation, you have a provider, you have a payer, and then you have the health plan. They're all separate entities that are all working together. The health plan contracts with the provider based on a certain network, and the employer group gets to choose what networks are going to make available, what they don't make available, and then what benefits are going to make available. So even though the health plan may have created a product, for most large employer groups, those are all modified. So it's the health plan, the payer itself, which in this case is the employer group, that decides what benefits are going to be provided to the employee and what isn't, what formularies are going to be covered, what isn't, what services are going to be in-network versus what's not. So in this case, who is the Health Information Network? I think we have to start there for our next meeting on price transparency, because it's now not clear to me. Because it's more than just what you're saying. There's a lot more players involved in it. And that's the what makes this complex. It's not like going to a restaurant. Essentially, the health plan is the one who's pricing out the cost of all the food in the restaurant. But there's an intermediary between the waiter and the patron who's basically saying, nope, this table can't order that because in this employer group, we're not providing those products that way. We're providing it a different way. So it's not quite as simple as the Uberization or ordering in a restaurant scenario. And all I want to get to is if this is the goal, then we need a real life use case that we can use to say how it would work. Otherwise, it's not implementable. And that's what I'm trying to make sure that we, whatever it is we do, we can do it.
I agree with you on that one. I think, sorry, I got cut off there, guys. In some of the comments I've made in the Google Doc, and you can read these at your leisure, hopefully before tomorrow, I have a concern over how we could actually make this happen, given the healthcare system as it stands, because there's a difference between the price that Andy gets charged for a service and the price that John gets charged for the service for a whole variety of factors. And to enable price transparency in the whole broad, what could this mean for me if I chose to have go and receive care somewhere else or chose to have another provider, could actually be a massive burden. I'm not arguing against it. I'm just saying, we need to have that use case and work through what it could actually mean.
And could also allow for rationalization when somebody gets charged 23 times the Medicare rate.
Oh, absolutely.
For a service that they could have gotten three blocks away at near the Medicare rate. So, you know, having that transparency is critical. And it can be done. It's the will to be done. And of course, there's going to be a lot of objections about it because of the protections that's built in through opacity. So that's a topic for tomorrow. But I just was looking for, in this moment, a clarification on accountability of the HINs when, you know, prices aren't transparent and aren't posted. I mean, we had enough challenges just even trying to get the charge masters prices displayed. So I just throw that out into the queue. So who's accountable and how are they accountable in the definitions of as defined by Congress?
Those are good points. We are going to talk about this one tomorrow. Please, can everybody, when we're thinking about this stuff over the rest of today and first part of tomorrow, try and come up with how we could see this, how we want this to work, so that when we get together, we can prevent unintended consequences and debate the intended consequences, because I'm sure we have a difference of opinion on that as well.
care. I have a 2 o'clock call, so I'm sorry. I'm going to have to sign off.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
See you tomorrow. Take care. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.